Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jackie Leiden in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Central Falls, Rhode Island, dates back to 1731. Proud home of Elizabeth Buffum Chase, a conductor in the Underground Railroad. Now gateway city to the American dream for its majority immigrant population. And on Monday, it earned another place in the history books when it filed for bankruptcy and became the poster child for cash-strapped cities across the country. This hour on Point, American cities on the financial ropes. You can join the conversation. How is your city or county or state doing? Are your cops and firemen getting paid? Your potholes filled? Will your town go bankrupt or will it weather this recession? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining me first from Providence, Rhode Island, is John Hill, staff writer for the Providence Journal. He's been covering Central Falls for the paper. Welcome to On Point, John.
Thank you for having me, Jackie.
John, we're pleased that you're with us. This has become a national story. You, of course, at the Providence Journal, you and your colleagues have been on it for a long while, but now it is going coast to coast. Walk us through what happened. The city, about 20,000 people, declared bankruptcy on Monday. Why was that?
The problem they're looking at here is that it's sort of been almost a century in the making as the textile industry that was so dominant up here went south, both literally and figuratively. And the city's industrial tax base started to decline to where now it's primarily underused mill buildings and double and triple decker housing that, as you pointed out, is pretty much now housing for people with lower incomes. 30% of the population lives under the poverty level.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been happening is that kind of a tax base doesn't generate enough money to support the municipal operations by itself. And the city became very dependent on state aid. It was getting by until the credit crisis of 2008, when the state in 2009 had to cut its own budget, and it cut state aid to Central Falls. And that put Central Falls under the level where it was able to meet its obligations. The city tried to go into bankruptcy. The state said, wait a second, let's see if we can fix this. They took the process over. That was 14 months ago. But they weren't able to fix it. And that led to Monday's filing.
And I think we should point out that it is a rare thing for a municipality to declare bankruptcy. Municipal bonds have been considered one of the safest investments anyone could make. So we are talking about something that some worry could be the tip of an iceberg. But you have also pointed out the factors that are specific to this place. And as you say, really, it is the recession of 08 that triggered this. It is affecting the pensions of just over 140 people, though, among other things, right?
Yes. It's interesting because every time you have a conversation with somebody about this, it always starts with the words, this is uncharted territory for me. But because while the particular part of the bankruptcy law that deals with municipalities has been used about 600 times since it was enacted, I think, in 1937, most of those instances have been for smaller things like sewer districts, water districts, or particular government entities that were drawing revenue from a particular, say landfill fees or something, and that revenue stream dried up. The instances of municipalities or counties actually using this process is very small. And so there isn't a lot of case law on this to guide the process in how you do it. There's really basically two cases right now, both from California, Orange County in 1994 and the city of Vallejo in 2008. And everybody's taking those cases and trying to make them fit to the circumstances they're seeing in front of them now. But each case that comes up is new, and each case that comes up now is going to sort of reinvent the process a little. That's where we are here.
As I read your work and the reports of your colleagues, and please correct me if I'm wrong, we're talking about a deficit of about $5.5 million roughly by the end of June next year. And one of the places that savings are being looked for is from the pensions of retired police and firefighters, about $2.5 million, so roughly half that savings. We're not talking about big pensions these people are receiving. We're talking about an average of $32,000.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem that I think that the state-appointed receiver, Robert Flanders, is confronting with this, because there isn't a lot there in Central Falls to cut. You know, 5.4, 5.6 million, you know, to a state government may not be that big a deal, but Central Falls only has about 16.4 million in revenue to cover that. As things have gotten tight over the past few years, one of the ways they were able to make the gap narrower, and it wasn't necessarily a particularly responsible thing to do, was they stopped contributing to the pension plan. There was money in there, and so retirees have still been getting their checks, but the problem is some of those funds could run out of money as soon as this fall. So they have to come up with either a way to reduce pension benefits that they are paying to their current retirees, or a way to find to put more money into the fund. The amount they're looking at right now is about, I think, 3.4, 3.5 million that they've got to come up with out of, you know, revenues of 16.4 million, and it's just not there. And like you make the point, I think the highest paid retiree here is getting $54,000 a year. About more than half of them are in the range between $24,000 and $36,000 a year. And a lot of these people don't get Social Security because they're municipal employees. And so that gives them a lot less to give up.
All right, John, if you would hold on, please, for just a moment. I'd like to introduce the city's receiver, Mr. Flanders, right now. Joining us from Providence is Robert Flanders, a former state Supreme Court judge, and he's now the state-appointed receiver for the city of Central Falls, Rhode Island. Welcome to On Point, Judge Flanders.
Hi, Jackie. Glad to be here.
We're glad to have you with us. You were quoted in the press the other day, I think in the Providence Journal, among other places, saying that with this move, Governor Lincoln Chafee was with you, Central Falls would rise from the ashes of bankruptcy to prosper again. But it's a dramatic move. Why bankruptcy?
Well, it was clearly a last resort. We tried to do this by agreement with our unions and with our retirees, but in the end, the ask was just too big to have people give up half of their pensions and go into a health care plan that required them for the first time to come up with 20% copays and deductibles of $2,000 and so forth. So I think the feeling was that they would take their chances in bankruptcy. It was a dramatic situation for them to be confronted with, and I don't blame them because, after all, none of us would like to have our pensions, if we had them, slashed on that order of magnitude. But the city simply had no choice.
Well, I will point out that they don't get Social Security, and we're talking about just over 140 retired police and firefighters. Did you actually say that they should just get a lawyer?
Well, they do have counsel now, or at least many of them do. That was evident in the bankruptcy hearing. But the reason for the bankruptcy is that in bankruptcy, the debtor has powers that the receiver doesn't have, namely to implement these changes on day one of the bankruptcy, and they stay there until unless the bankruptcy court decides that they need to be altered. And hopefully the judge won't do that because we don't have the money to alter them.
So exactly what will bankruptcy give you? Are you hoping for protection from the liability of paying these pensions, or are there other things that you hope to get out of it? Now, for example, Vallejo, California is about to emerge from bankruptcy after being in it for some years. What's your prognosis for Central Falls?
Well, we're going to present a plan to the judge that will hopefully have our revenues be equal to our expenditures and cut away this $5.6 million deficit. Excuse me. But that's going to take some sacrifices on the pension side and new plans for police and fire and layoffs as well. So we basically have to shrink the city by a third in order to make this work in terms of expenses, and that's going to be very difficult on a city that has a very narrow tax base and has already been through a series of cost reduction measures. So it's not going to be a pleasant experience for anyone, but rather than default on our obligations and not send any pension checks and just let this thing to go to hell in a handbasket, the better solution, I think, is for people to accept the cuts, or at least have the bankruptcy judge impose them, and and try and get the city stabilized so that it can attract economic development in the future, because nobody's going to come or stay in Central Falls while all this uncertainty exists.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be hearing from a retired firefighter later. I just want to say you have already pared to the bone in Central Falls, correct? You've closed the swimming pool, a community center, the library, many other things that frankly make a city a city.
That's no question about it. We had to make some terrible choices, such as the ones you just mentioned. But there are more to come, because we still have a gap to make up, and so we need to find efficiencies wherever we can, always balancing it against public safety, because you don't want to compromise public safety. So we're looking at things like outsourcing some or all of the services, rather than staff them in-house, which is always more expensive, or typically more expensive.
Services like the police and firefighters?
Well, at least in part, there may be some of that. There certainly rescue, for example, could be outsourced rather than have it done by the city. There's garbage collection. There's janitorial services. So there's a range of things that we could look to on an outsourcing basis that might be less expensive for the city, and that could be part of the plan.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being with us, Judge Flanders. Thank you. This is On Point. I'm Jackie Lydon, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about cities, towns, and counties across America whose budgets have been bleeding red at least since the Great Recession of 08. And we're asking who sees more trouble ahead for communities. We're talking about the new poster child of cash-strapped cities, Central Falls, Rhode Island, which actually went bankrupt on Monday. My guest this hour is John Hill, staff writer for the Providence Journal in Rhode Island. We heard a few minutes ago from Central Falls receiver. Let's hear a couple more voices from that city. First, from Central Falls. We hear from John Garvey. He's acting chief of the Central Falls Fire Department. Welcome to On Point, John Garvey.
Hi, Jackie. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. So I hope that you were able to hear the city's receiver.
Yes.
And what he had to say, Robert Flanders. What do you say to that? They're asking for more money from your pensions.
Well, it's a little bit discouraging, Jackie. And I understand, you know, that the city has to do what they have to do, or the receiver has to do what he has to do. But, you know, from a employee standpoint, it's a little frustrating when you've contributed since day one, and I've been here over 25 years. It's frustrating when you've contributed from day one into your pension plan, and now they're telling you that, you know, you might only get half.
Mm-hmm. How many police and firefighters, I know that you are a firefighter, of course, but how many police and firefighters are affected?
You're talking about active members?
Well, the pensions.
Oh, I know now we actually have more retirees than we have active members, so I'm going to say there's probably maybe 45 fire retirees. I'm not sure on the police side.
Okay. And the cuts that you're being asked to accept are what?
Our pension plan specifies a certain amount depending on the time that you serve. For instance, we have a 20-year retirement plan. You would get 50% of your pay taxed at 20 years, and then it goes up 2% per year till the 25th year, which means 60%. And then another percent after that up until 30 years, which means 65%. But that's all taxed, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So, in essence, this is really something that hasn't happened before, just reaching into the pension funds that you are all had expected to count on.
Yes.
So what does it mean for the department?
Well,
I mean, you're still going out fighting fires.
And my job, obviously, is, first of all, I got two groups of people to protect, is the citizens of Central Falls and the guys I work with. And the guys that I work with, I don't want to see their morale go down. I don't want to see them to get discouraged, not want to come to work, that type of thing. And sometimes when you do things like this, cutting pensions or making them pay more for health care, whatever, you know, it tends to affect morale sometimes, you know. The other thing is, though, we have a very small but dedicated group of guys here, and I'm sure that through thick and thin that the job is still going to get done. You know, the fires are going to get put out, the inspections are going to get done, and whatever else we have to do, the sick and injured people are going to get treated. It gets a little discouraging, and, you know, my job is to take care of the morale issue around here.
And you guys have gotten a lawyer.
Our union has a lawyer, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, John Garvey, acting chief of the Central Falls Fire Department, thanks for being with us, Chief Garvey.
Oh, you're welcome.
Let's go now to Marta Martinez. She also is joining us from Central Falls, Rhode Island. She's the director of communications for Progreso Latino, the only nonprofit social services provider in Central Falls. Welcome to On Point, Marta Martinez.
Hi, Jackie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us. Give us a little snapshot of what the city looks like this summer, what you're doing and what's going on.
Well, the city is business as usual. Their businesses are open. The residents are just going about their usual day-to-day life. On June 30th, however, when we heard the news about the closing of the community center and the library, that morning when I came home from work, our switchboards was lighting up because people were calling to try to get information from Progreso Latino. Progreso serves a large number of Latinos in the city of Central Falls, which is 60%. So many of our clients may have heard the news, but they were calling to find out more details from us.
60% Latino population in Central Falls, you're saying?
Yes. And so we learned that the community center had closed, which means that the services for young people primarily, which is what concerns many residents, were closed. That is the swimming pool, some of the youth programs that had been scheduled for the summer. And coming along in the fall, there are some after school programs also that were housed or organized through the center. Many calls that came in were focused on what was going to happen to the youth programs through the center.
Beyond that, would you say that, I don't know how long you've lived in Central Falls, I'd like to know, there's a sense of apprehension amongst your neighbors, or do people think, well, this is not great news, but we'll get through it?
Well, it's like you said, it's not great news, and they'll get through it. And as people come to Progreso Latino, we have actually made contact with City Hall. Because we are the only social service agency, and we do serve Latinos, but we serve other residents, they do come to us for questions, so we've made it a point to stay in touch with the City Hall so that we have information that we can present to residents. But the kinds of questions that we are getting were answered just recently by John Garvey. What's going to happen to the fire services? What's going to happen to the police department? Are we going to lose those services? And we know because we're in touch with City Hall, we have those answers. So we're able to give them. But people are just going day to day, waiting to see what happens. They're not panicking. They're not worried that the city is going to close tomorrow.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Marta Martinez, who is with Progreso Latino, a nonprofit social service provider in Central Falls. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jackie.
That's the view from Central Falls, or at least a couple of views. Let's go national now. Ryan Holywell is a staff writer for Governing Magazine and author of the blog FedWatch. Welcome, Ryan.
Thank you, Jackie.
And there's a lot to watch just now. What is going on here? We should establish that bankruptcy is fairly rare for a municipality, even though it is often feared, because it's not a thing that any municipality would choose, is it?
It's exceptionally rare. There's in sort of the historically, there's only been about 8 municipal bankruptcies a year. This one in Rhode Island is, I believe, the fifth one this year. There were 6 last year. And it's not typically cities and counties that are filing for these municipal bankruptcies. Those are the ones you hear about. But it's very often these sort of quasi-public entities, sort of special utility districts and things like that. And municipal bankruptcy is rare for two reasons. One is we've already discussed. It's not a cure-all. It's not going to fix all these problems for a city or a county that's experiencing difficulty because it's incredibly expensive. I believe the one in Vallejo is approaching $10 million for that city, and that's money that doesn't actually fix the problem. That's just money that deals with litigation. Mm-hmm. And the other reason it's rare is that in about half the states in the country, the municipalities have to get permission from the states to do this, and that's not something that most states would want to give. Because of the fear of sort of a contagion effect.
I understand that Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, is considering filing bankruptcy.
That's another one that's on the radar. They've had a big problem with their debt due to an incinerator project that's given them a lot of trouble. The other one that we're dealing with right now is in Jefferson County, Alabama, and that one we could actually learn as early as today if they're going to file for bankruptcy.
John Hill from the Providence Journal, when you listened to the receiver, Mr. Flanders, and he talked about possible outsourcing, what about this kind of impact? For example, we were just talking about the money that can be spent in litigation. Do you see that kind of scenario happening in Central Falls?
Well, Judge Flanders has said he does not want to get into a Vallejo situation where that process took, I think, about 3 years. And he says he's going to, within 30 days, submit a plan to the court that says this is how we're going to do it, and in hopes that the court is going to say, yes, go, fine, this is legal. The judge in the case has said he wants this handled swiftly while still being able to protect everybody's due process rights as we go through it. One of the things that stretched out the Vallejo process was that the unions contested the city's ability to impose new contract conditions. That had to be settled. Once that was, the process moved forward. What's going to be interesting with Central Falls is, and where Central Falls may move this whole story ahead nationally, is Central Falls is going to be, as near as anybody can tell, the first time a municipality is trying to use Chapter 9 to change what it pays its retirees. There is some argument that you can make, and their lawyer for the retirees made it at the status conference they had yesterday, that bankruptcy courts don't have jurisdiction over pension payments, that those can't be touched. There's a legal argument you can make there. Whether that flies or not, who knows? But no, everybody who's been in a Chapter 9, at least these larger ones, Orange County, Vallejo, they avoided dealing with the pension issue. Central Falls can't because so much of the debt is what is owed the pension funds. They've got to come up with some way to either get more money into the fund or decrease what they're paying the retirees. And unless they can get an agreement with the retirees, you know, and if this goes the distance like Vallejo did in the case where if the retirees decide to push this issue, this could be where the Central Falls case makes new law.
That's really interesting. Also, it's not the only metric, is it, Ryan Holywell, bankruptcy, that indicates that a city or community is struggling. I mean, it is a dramatic one, and this may break new ground. But there are many, many cities that are in dire straits.
And if you talk to mayors throughout the country, what they'll tell you is the issue isn't bankruptcy because it's so rare. I was talking to Ted Ellis this morning, and he's the mayor of Bluffton, Indiana, and he's a member of the executive team at the National League of Cities. And you know, he says when he's talking to people at conferences and member of organizations, I mean, bankruptcy isn't even a subject that comes up. What they're more worried about is, like you said, they're in the process of fourth or fifth year of having to cut budgets. Their revenues are down. You know, property tax values, which is the main source of revenue in most cities, are down as a result of the housing crisis. Sales tax revenue is down, and as a result, they're having to cut services. They're laying off employees, and cities really are service organizations. They provide the infrastructure that that we drive on. They provide the police and firefighters who keep us safe. They they have the libraries and the pools and all of these sorts of things that are quality of life issues. And those are the things that are being affected almost universally across the board. I mean, I haven't talked to a mayor or city council member who's not dealing with these issues.
All right. Well, let's think about what the quality of life is that makes a city a city. We expect that or a small town or any community, these are some of the bedrock things, I think, that people expect that they're going to have. And Moody's is talking about downgrading. Does that mean that cities are going to have a more expensive time borrowing? Ryan Holywell.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always the fear is, you know, these mayors and city council members and community leaders, they're not worried that the situation in Rhode Island is going to trigger bankruptcies. They don't worry that it's sort of a bellwether of things to come. What they're worried about is sort of the reaction that this will have, sort of the perception issue of Central Falls being in the news. You know, so far the market hasn't panicked as a result of the municipal bond market, I should say, hasn't panicked as a result of the Central Falls issue, simply because it was a long time coming. I don't think anyone was surprised when they learned that Central Falls had filed for bankruptcy. But that is the issue that they're monitoring.
Ryan, we're
Could
going
I add
to stop.
That,
well,
quickly,
I was hoping to take a call from a Rhode Islander. Go ahead.
Yeah, just, I'll be quick. One of the things that has mitigated the impact, too, is Rhode Island last month passed a law that says if a municipality issues bonds, those bondholders get first crack at the city's tax revenue if there's a Chapter 9. So bondholders have been sort of insulated from the effects of this.
Yes, and that's true across the country. Let's take a quick call. John is calling from Westerly, Rhode Island. Welcome to On Point, John.
Hi, Jackie. I was a former resident of Central Falls, so over 10 years, and my wife was born and raised there. The family just sold some property up there. And my comment was having to do with the political aspect of this. Central Falls was pretty much a one-party town for as long as I can remember. And I don't want to name the party because it doesn't really matter what party is in charge. But I'm just wondering what your guests think of the impact of not having the normal checks and balances on that town, and also the fact that they lost their industrial base and they lost their business base. So they were relying solely on homeowners. Wonderful people up there, and wish them the best. But I'm interested in the comment on the one party rule for so long.
Okay, thank you, John. Well, John Hill, you've got just over a minute. I mean, do you blame it on politics or do you blame it on the realities of the economy?
Well, the politics, you know, produced the leaders it produced, and sometimes people get the government they choose to have. He's right. There really is no functioning two-party system in Central Falls.
It's a Democratic town?
It's the Democratic Party, but the party itself isn't a single monolithic Democratic Party. There are candidates who set up their own organizations and get elected. So it's more sort of a personality-based system than really Republican-Democrat.
And the mayor, I think, is out of the picture at the moment.
Yeah, the mayor's out of the picture, and there's an extra complication. There is a federal investigation going on into potential corruption that has been – there's been a grand jury impaneled and evidence is being taken. Nothing's been announced on that. But the caller does make a good point, is that when Judge Flanders and the receiver before him were appointed, they were basically given the power of every elected official in the city. They can make every decision except having the ability to break contracts, which is why they went for the bankruptcy. They've assumed the power of the mayor, the city council, the liquor control. Everything goes through Flanders' office. He's not elected.
All right.
And there are some people who are kind of complaining that, you know, one person made the point, immigrants from all over the world come to the United States so they can live in a democracy. And if they're living in Central Falls, they're living in a place where they can't vote for the leaders.
This is On Point. I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about cities big and small across America reeling from a stubborn recession and decades of recession to come. My guests are John Hill from the Providence Journal and Ryan Holywell. He's a staff writer for Governing Magazine. John and Ryan, before we go deeper into the national picture, let's go to Costa Mesa, California. We're speaking with Billy Folsom. He's an auto and motorcycle mechanic for the city and a board member of the Costa Mesa City Employees Association. Billy, Costa Mesa has been in the national headlines as well. Why don't you refresh us on what's been happening out there?
Well, hi, Jackie. What's been happening is, like all cities, we've been suffering from the recession. we've been very proactive since 2008 and even before in mitigating that by giving up retirement benefits and wages and stuff like that. So we've been very proactive. And fortunately, that's resulted in Costa Mesa being fairly healthy. However, we have a new city council that wants to ride this wave of municipal bankruptcies and stuff to try and gain more concessions from us and actually really get rid of public employees and the pension obligations that go with them.
But we should say the city is not bankrupt.
No, not even close. We just did a forensic audit that showed that we have $26 million available if needed to cover any expenses that we may have.
But
so this has been a manufactured crisis out here in Costa Mesa.
Well, Billy, I will point out that we're speaking to you as a union member, but also I believe that what happened is in March, nearly half the workforce in the city was told that it would be terminated in 6 months and the jobs outsourced. Now, the other day, a judge ruled that the city has to stop laying off workers, at least for the moment. What does that mean?
Well, it still leaves us in limbo. Yes, we did receive our pink slips to be laid off. Like I say, the city council, the four men in the city council, is using this municipal crisis around the country to try and reduce our workforce. And it's been very difficult on the employees out here. We know that we're not in financial trouble. We want to do our job. We've made major concessions over the last few years to mitigate the effects of the recession. And I think this council just wants to make a political statement rather than a financial statement and try and ride this wave to higher political office.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for being with us. We'll also say that we want to remember that one of your colleagues, a city maintenance employee, actually committed suicide. It has been a difficult and tension-filled debate, and you certainly are not finished having it. Let's get your take on this, Ryan Holywell. How do you estimate that sort of situation? Is that, too, something that we're seeing more of, a real standoff between city councils and public workers?
You know, I think so. You know, when you look at this pension issue and cities and states asking people who receive pensions to sort of take haircuts, it's interesting because there's one group of people who say, you know, these pension benefits you're receiving are, it's taxpayer money. You're getting taxpayer money. They essentially view it almost as a bonus. When you talk to people in the unions, they say, you know, these pension benefits are part of the entire compensation package that, you know, we agreed to when we became employees. You know, they say they took probably a little bit less in salary than they might have been able to get in the private sector. And in exchange, they, you know, made an agreement that they'd get these, you know, generous pension benefits and a little bit more job security. And now they feel like, you know, their leaders are trying to switch things up.
Billy Folsom in Costa Mesa, California, in Orange County, you were given a pink slip. Do you think your job will end on September 17th, or don't you know?
Well, like I say, this was a breach of our contract, and we have a judge that has sided with us on that, and there is an injunction against the layoffs at this time. So I believe we'll still be able to serve the citizens of Costa Mesa after that time. However, I don't think long-term that this city council will be reasonable in that regard. Like I said, I think it's more politics than finance. So until they accomplish their political goals, I don't think our jobs are safe.
How many layoffs are we talking about?
I believe there were 203 out of approximately 400.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Billy Folsom.
Thank you.
All right. Are these kinds of things, do you think, John Hill, asking, not, for example, in Central Falls, for a few years, I believe, if I have this right, the city didn't actually contribute to the pension funds. Is that sort of thing a kind of a financial gimmick, if you will?
Yeah, I think part of what was going on is, you know, you have the leaking roof, you have the busted boiler. That's an immediate need. It's staring you right in the face. And then you have the pension fund. There's $3 million in there. Yeah, you're supposed to put $1 million in, but you know what? I can wait a year. I've got this thing I have to do right now. And the problem is, if you don't do that pension contribution every year, pretty soon you're in a hole so deep you can't get out. And that's what happened with Central Falls. They haven't contributed for 3 years, and now it's running out of money. But there's a point I'd like to make, kind of tying into the Costa Mesa thing, and it was a point Ryan made earlier in the show that I think that needs to be sort of highlighted when he was talking about how it cost Vallejo about $10 million for the Chapter 9. A lot of municipal people, officials who are talking about this, are following this ability to impose new contracts thing almost off a cliff. If you talk to the lawyers in the Vallejo case, they say be very careful what you wish for, because if you go into a Chapter 9, your people are going to have to start. You're gonna have to start giving depositions. You're gonna have to start doing research, probably in a government entity that's already cut its staff to the bone. And that $10 million could have gone to their creditors, but it didn't. And in Central Falls, when the mayor and the city council tried to go into bankruptcy, they thought they were going to be able to bust all their union contracts. And what wound up happening is someone got appointed that took all their power away from them. And now all they get to do is sit back, read the paper, and see what's happening. So, you know, municipal people need to be very careful. If they think Chapter 9 is going to answer all their problems, it may just give them a whole new set of new ones that they don't expect to have.
All right. Let's take some of our listener calls. We're talking about cities and towns and the financial trouble they're in ever since the Great Recession of 08. And certainly the news this week didn't encourage very many people. So Nicholas is calling from Hohenwald, Tennessee. Welcome to On Point, Nicholas.
Hi, Jackie. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I enjoy listening to you. I just wanted to make a couple points. I felt that it was necessary for me to call in when you said to call in and speak your mind. So here's what I have to say. First of all, the American people need to understand that the recession was a whole lot deeper and a bigger hole than what we had ever dreamed of. They didn't come out and tell us exactly how deep because they was fear of panic and, you know, people would be thinking it's like a depression. Well, you might as well say that we went into a depression. The other thing is that under the Constitution, and I'm pretty certain it's under the Fourth Amendment, the powers of Congress, the Constitution gives Congress the power under certain circumstances to print the amount of money that the United States government needs. So there really shouldn't be a debt right now because of the recession and the two wars we're in, almost three wars. Congress has that power, and they should use that power right now to alleviate the stress and the financial burdens that these states are going through, and let them start with a clean slate to get them on a straight path out of the recession and then pick up their tax revenues. But they can't get no tax revenues until they get jobs. People that don't have jobs can't pay taxes. You can't collect taxes unless people have jobs. People that don't have jobs, they can't spend money, which businesses can't turn around and hire. It's a vicious cycle. So instead of fighting the cycle, let Congress do its job.
Okay.
Let Congress print the amount of money that's needed and then collect the tax.
All right. Thank you for that, Nicholas. Ryan, I'm going to punt that to you. Congress cannot simply print more money. We can't print more money to get out of this, can we?
Well, you know, he kind of makes an interesting point because there is sort of some discussion, and, you know, this is all sort of theoretical because I don't think anyone actually thinks it would gain traction, but there's some people who would like Congress to have some sort of countercyclical fund that would give money to state and local governments when they're in this, you know, sort of situation that we're in right now. You know, the interesting thing is that at this time that state and local governments are reeling, you know, we just passed this debt agreement that's probably going to wind up cutting about $1 trillion over 10 years from domestic discretionary spending. And about a third of all domestic discretionary spending goes to state and local governments. So, you know, actually at a time when these people, these local officials and these governments are struggling, they're really not getting any sort of hand from Washington to get their way out of it.
I mean, theoretically, of course, Congress could enact some sort of bill that would give these municipalities money, but that is so antithetical to the mood that we're seeing right now in Washington that that is certainly not going to happen anytime in the near future.
Exactly.
Let's take a couple comments on our Facebook page. Jeff Parsons says, it doesn't sound very good. I hope that people who are supposed to get paid to serve and protect do get paid. After all, they deserve every penny they make and more. Those men and women don't get paid enough as it is. Someone needs to fix this problem as soon as possible. Corey on our website writes, if the government pursues a policy of using bankruptcy to screw people out of pensions and benefits they've already earned, I see no other alternative than to begin a continuum of revolution. John Hill, I don't necessarily think we're back at Bunker Hill, but do you think that in some ways what we're seeing, whether it be Costa Mesa or in Central Falls, that people are beginning to wonder, hey, you mentioned the immigrants coming to Central Falls to make another stab at it. This is not the American dream I thought I was going to be living. I think that's a widespread feeling.
Yeah, and I think now I think last year or so, I think governments sort of picked the low-hanging fruit, the things that were easy to cut, and that stuff's gone. And now they're finding they still have to cut. The closing of the library and the community center in Central Falls were particularly traumatic because, you know, in Central Falls, the internet service there was the only internet service a lot of people had. The day they announced the closing, I was standing on the steps talking to this guy who said he didn't get cable and he didn't go to the movies because he couldn't afford it, but he could come to the library and take out DVDs. There was another guy who was going in there and he was using the internet there to try to find a job. Kids come from the high school. They say you can tell when schools close because the place would fill up with kids using it to do their homework because they didn't have that at home. The community center provided daycare for families who, you know, maybe it was a one-parent family and that parent was having to work. And you're starting to see now services that sort of the very basic basic services, folks that right there, you know, they actually doing the actual living and dying in the town were counting on. Those things are starting to go away. But the problem with Central Falls is they don't really have the ability to increase taxes anymore.
Yeah,
they upped the car tax last year, and the collection rate dropped from like 90% to 59%. People just stopped paying.
You know, you said it, living and dying. It made me think, and I don't mean to be facetious, the Frank Capra movie, It's a Wonderful Life. And, you know, is Bedford Falls turning into Pottersville, if you've seen the movie, the opposite, the dark version of what Bedford Falls was. Let's go now to the caller. Laz is calling from Newport, Rhode Island. Laz, welcome to On Point.
Oh, thank you for having me, Jackie. I want to make three very brief points.
We have just 3 minutes, I'll tell you right now. Can you make it 1 point?
yes. You know, we have one of the most corrupt states in the entire country. You know, a governor will go to jail, and he gets out of jail, and he gets a TV show, a radio show, and a newspaper show. We have one of the worst and incompetent economic development corporations. We invite, you know, baseball players like Kirk Schilling to come to a state, and we give them $75 million to start a wayward business, but we don't help our own small businesses, which are the key generators of the smallest state in the country. So those are two things that also, you know, really helped push Central Falls, though they're very much behind the scenes. You know, where's the accountability over the last 20 years for the people who put the residents of Central Falls and the entire state where they are?
Okay, thank you so much for making that point. And what about that, John Hill? Certainly, Rhode Island has had a very, you know, a small state with a big, bad reputation at times for this kind of mismanagement.
Yeah, I don't think, though, really the Central Falls situation can be attributed to that. It was more the underlying economics. If you looked at what was going on there, you could see this coming, the declining tax base, a population that had a high need of social services. I understand what the caller's saying and that it can sometimes sort of depress you. But it also, you know, kind of in a weird way, we're kind of proud of it. But I don't see that as really being a contributing factor to this.
Okay, thank you. Ryan, I just want to ask you very, very quickly before we close, is the debt ceiling contributing, you think, to the sense of the boom being lowered? Does it put a bigger burden on communities like Central Falls?
I think it will. The problem is right now, none of these state and local leaders know exactly what's going to get cut. You know, they were all very relieved that we didn't default. At the same time, when I was talking to people from city halls over the country during those negotiations, no one actually expected to default to happen. They were worried about what in the world is going to be in this agreement. And so far, they're not happy with what they're seeing. So I think when Congress gets back from its recess, you're going to see a lot of mayors, state legislators, city council members knocking on doors on Capitol Hill saying, you know, help us save our cities.
Mm-hmm. And they all they've been able to keep Medicaid so far, but we don't really know what the future holds. And that is a big, big portion of what these states have to pay, right?
That's exactly right. That's the big issue that the governors all across the country are trying to figure out. You know, as I said earlier, about a third of this domestic discretionary spending does go to state and local governments. Medicaid is obviously a big part of that.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for joining us today. It's been fascinating. John Hill joining us from Providence, Rhode Island. He's a staff writer for the Providence Journal. Ryan Holywell, he joined us from Washington, D.C., and he's a staff writer for Governing Magazine and author of the blog FedWatch. Lots of comments on our website, so please continue the conversation there and get the On Point podcast at our website at onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jackie Leiden. I'm in for Tom Ashbrook, and you are listening to On Point.